Blog Talk Radio.
Our community have become toxic waste, and those in high places are planning to remove the toxic waste. And while we flitter and live this frivolous, foolish life, seeking pleasure from our bodies and pleasure from the bodies of others, and seeking to be famous and wealthy in this world, to be used by the power to make our people think that if you go to school and work hard, you too can be successful. That's a lie. I don't give a damn how many of you go to school and work hard. They select a few out of the mass to deceive the rest that this house is not your house. And you are going to have to think about a house of your own, because white America, listen to me good, man, cannot support you any longer. White America cannot give jobs to her millions of unemployed, much less ours. Did you hear me? Elijah Muhammad told us in the 60s we should pool our resources and get farmland, because there is no freedom without land. You remember those teachings? He said that the time of separation had come, and that we are going to have to think about building a nation of our own. You, in the 60s, you were ready to say it's nation time. You don't say that no more, because you have been deceived into thinking that inclusion into this is your salvation. This that you want to be included in has no future. None.
Greetings and welcome to tonight's edition of the Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio Show. This is your host, Brother Carlton, and we're glad to have you in for tonight's show. Tonight's show, we are hosting our panel discussion, where we will discuss the last week's show, and we will also discuss news items having to do with community building and separating and controlling our own societies. Please always keep in mind, we encourage you to control the community that you live in. And if it doesn't seem like it's feasible to be able to control the community that you live in, then we should strongly consider moving to a community that we can control. So, if this is your first time calling in tonight, this is a weekly show, and our intention is to discuss and bring to the forefront why and how we need to have our own communities, why we need to come together. When I say we, I'm talking about Black people in general and Muslims in particular. For anyone who has a commonality and a kindred or a frame of mind, like minds, to have peace in their daily, day-to-day living, then you should consider controlling and building your own communities. And as a fact, other people are doing that. You have other ethnicities who come together to build their own communities. Whether they're religious or ideological, they come together because they know that there's strength in numbers, and they know that they are more likely to have peace if it's groups of people with the same mindset and the same ideology, same dogma, and the same rules and regulations for living. Well, why don't we do that? Why don't we, who are Muslims or Black people in general, We have the same faith, the same thought, to follow the same ideology, the same dogma, the same mindset. Why don't we come together and build a heaven for ourselves by having an environment, a community, where we all think more alike along the same lines, not the same, because we don't think exactly the same, but we can think along the same guidelines and base our thoughts and our actions on the same philosophy or belief system. And that will bring us peace. So last week, we were blessed to have a wonderful show. We had Brother Eric Simpson from the West Georgia Farmers Cooperative. And basically, he talked about his co-op, the history of it. And he also talked about the theory and the application of co-ops in general in various aspects of our lives. So if you enjoyed that show, and if you listened to it, please comment and tell us what you liked about it. Or if you had questions about the show, you can please push the 1 on your dial, and we will be glad to entertain your questions. So I see our brother Dr. Ridgely is on the line. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Ridgely.
Oh, wa alaikum salam. I just wanted to let you know I'm here, but I'm driving, and I know I'm going to go through a dead spot or two before I get to the farm. So I'm going to be listening because they ended up starting a conversation if I'm going to hit a dead spot. And then when I get back to the farm, I'll respond to what I hear. But y'all go ahead on in the meantime. Thank you.
You all?
Huh?
You said you all go on in the meantime?
Yeah, I'm just going to be on mute because, again, this it's going to go in and out. The phone's going to go in and out. So I might as well just go on mute and listen, and then when I get to the farm, then I can come back on and talk. So you can leave me on if you want. I'm just going to put it on mute, and then I take it off mute when I'm at the farm and I know I got a clear ticket. Okay?
Okay.
All right. So I'm late.
Well, it's fine. So, brothers and sisters, you heard it. Dr. Ridgely's in trance now. And so we are going to look forward to someone in our audience to go ahead and press that 1. And if you listened to our show last week, we'd like to hear what you thought about the show. Brother Eric Simpson, or the Eric Simpson of the West Georgia Farmers Co-op. Once again, the brother actually was inspired to take a leadership position with the co-op because the co-op has a legacy of unifying our black people, our black farmers. The legacy is that in farmers' co-ops, our people came together who own land, but when we have difficulty selling our product as individuals, because whoever we're selling it to, especially if it's not a buyer who's friendly with us or has our best interests in mind, it's better for us to come together as a group. And that's what the co-op, the Farmers Co-op, did and does. It represents multiple growers. And what it does is it can actually negotiate on behalf of the growers and make the products available to vendors. And the beauty of it is the co-op is not some outside entity that's controlling the growers' products. The co-op is actually the farmers and their families and their friends. They come together, they start an organization called a co-op, and they make plans and they make sales, and they purchase hardware, farming equipment, and seeds, and whatever they need to make their farms healthy and successful, they do it as a group. And that's a model that we need to really examine. You know, Dr. Ridgely inspired the members of the Ministry of Agriculture to start buying clubs. And so years ago, my wife and I in Oakland, California, we did that. And it's the same spirit. The buying club is the same spirit as the farming co-op. Basically, we pool our resources together, which is our money and our time and our effort, and we try to find the foods that we like to eat, that's, you know, the best foods that we can get, and we buy it in bulk. And we generally, when you buy food in bulk, you get a discount, and we share the food with each other and share the discount. And we also share the work, and we also share the planning. And so it's the same thing as a co-op. So if you like the idea of a farmer's co-op, but you don't live on a farm or you don't live in a farming area, what we do is we encourage you to start a produce buying club. You know, because most of us who live in the big cities, we live in areas, and what we can do is that we can put our money together and we can purchase our food together in bulk, and that's, you know, that's the city version of a farmer's co-op. So if that's something that you're interested in, we at the Ministry of Agriculture, we have experience with that, and Dr. Ridge's books tell you how to start a buying club, which is in principle the same thing as a farmer's co-op. So our brother, Brother Eric Simpson, he also talked about the history of how black people, you know, in the past had trouble, you know, securing these supplies and stuff for themselves. But with the help of the farmer's co-op, they were able to have more leverage to secure seeds, fertilizer, whatever they need to be able to farm better. They use the power of the farmer's co-op to be able to get better deals for themselves. So that's one of the another reasons why it's good to have a farmer's co-op. And the co-ops in general, they could be applied to purchasing, they could be applied to group operations, but also they can be applied to other things, you know, in terms of companies, large, you know, companies that you form. You can have an employer, you can have an employee-owned co-op. You know, if someone starts a company and the company employs a lot of people, instead of it being owned by one person, it can be owned by the employees. So there are movements now, international movements, and a few here in the U.S., where they are actually attempting to own the places where they work. And that's a true democratic model. You know, you say we live in America, it's a democratic country. However, the workplace has not been democratized. It's still a dictatorship. And so, you know, if you have one person or two people or a handful of people on board that owns a large company, and you have hundreds and thousands of people that work for the company, and they don't have any real say in how the company runs, and they can only make as much money as they're told they can make, that's a dictatorship. And so it's really counter-representative of where we're supposed to be living in the U.S. So if you have any comments or questions on that, go ahead and press the 1 on your dial, and you can go ahead and make a comment or ask a question, because we'd like to hear what you, how do you feel about that? You know, how do you feel about, you know, the application of co-op? I'm going to put you on mute, Dr. Rich. Dr. Rich, put your phone on mute.
Okay, put it on mute.
Yeah, I hear your vehicle noise.
Okay, I'll put it on mute.
Okay, so there. So if you have any, if anyone has any comments or questions or your ideas on the co-op model, we'd like to hear them. The co-ops is not something that's really discussed a lot in the black community in terms of business models. Whenever you hear someone that's going to business, it's either going to be privately owned or owned by a couple of people. And sometimes we have nonprofits, but in the black community, we never hear anybody say, "I'm starting a co-op." You know, I've never heard it. The only thing I've heard it was in the Ministry of Agriculture when we're starting buying clubs. So why is that? You know, what is it about the co-op model that doesn't come to mind when we say we're going to start a business? You know, is it because, you know, is it just we think it's too difficult to start, or is it because we don't have enough people, or, you know, is it because we don't think it's something that's applicable to what we're doing? So we'd like to hear that. And we have a caller on the line. I think that's Sister Ann. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, sir. How are you?
Oh, real good now that you pressed the 1 and got on the call.
Okay. Well, I'm going to comment about the co-op model.
Yes, ma'am.
It's because a lot of our people are not aware of the cooperative model when it comes to trying to organize a community or do things when it comes to purchasing food or other forms of purchasing. The cooperative, you know, Dr. Rizzo, he has stated, is just a group of people. And we're getting to that point, but we're not there yet. Our finances are not in order, and we have a lot. We have some people, as we do in other cultures, who are able to come together and pool their resources and do things, but the majority of our people are not there yet. We still have a lot to learn and a lot to do. We have to start by first teaching our people the basics of economics, you know, how to, even on a small income, just set something aside and, you know, live, I would say, below your means until you are able to do certain things. That's real hard for people to do. It was hard for me to do. And it's just in the last few years that I'm learning that, really. You know, we say in our teachings that you don't really learn how to live until you are, what, 70, 75, somewhere along in there?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I'm at that point, and I'm really just learning a lot of things, to just have patience with what I want and work my plan, and pretty soon I'm able to get what I want. A lot of people have not reached that level yet, and we have to teach them. So we have to back up a little bit with our people, and because, you know, we're dealing with a new generation now that, you know, I'm seeing a lot of things that they want differently. They don't want the home ownership that we and our parents wanted. I don't think a lot of young people are, you know, grappling to own homes. I was reading an article not long ago where many are putting that aside in lieu of being able to pick up and move when they need to and do other things. So,
wow, so they must not be planning for families either then.
Yes. Well, you know, we have this thing in our community where you have the single mothers, you know.
Okay.
They're
yes,
not
ma'am.
Planning on it, but they're still having children. So I'm seeing a trend, and I'm sure others are seeing it too, whereas we've got to somehow get to the young people. And when I say young, I mean 35 and below, you know, maybe 40 and below. But we have to instill in them the idea of being able to own something and do something for yourself. Let me point out this. My husband and I were at the DeKalb Farmers Market this weekend, and we noticed a lot of young black people. Now, I've been going to that farmers market since the 90s, since
wow.
about 1990. And when I first started going there, sometimes my family would be the only other black people
wow.
at the farmers market. Today, that has tremendously changed. It has, I would say, there's more than 50%. I would say it's more like 80%. I don't know if that's because of the demographics changing so much in Atlanta or what it is. But we are noticing that, and we noticed a lot of younger black people shopping there, some shopping alone, some, of course, with others. But I'm seeing a trend, and I spotted more black males than females. So,
really?
You know, yes. And it seems that they are looking for something different now. And, you know, we've got to get control of that. And the reason I say we have to get control, because, you know, they're wondering, they're floundering, they're doing what they think. I've been in the market before, and I've been stopped by people. I was in the, aisle where I think it's the teas, where you buy herbal teas. And I was going over to where you get your olive oil. And there was two young black females standing there, and they were just debating on what to buy. So they asked me, you know, what's the best oil to buy? And I, you know, began to explain to them that olive oil was the better oil. You know, they were looking at some of the other oils there. But, you know, they're out there, and they're looking,
mm-hmm.
and they want somebody to be able to, you know, just teach them what is right, what they need to know. And we've got to get to them some kind of way. We have everything we need to get to our young people. We have the teaching. We have plenty of books. So we have the charge now to get to the young people and to teach them the way, the cooperative method of doing things. And, you know, they will appreciate it, I believe, even more so now than they did in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But that's my contribution, that, you know, the reason we are not contributing or taking part in cooperatives on a large scale is because many don't know about it. Our finances are not in order. And, you know, we just have to get control of that.
Right. Well, it seems like it's a worthy, you know, from my point of view, it's a worthy mission. It's just that the young people don't know about it, but it also seems like many of the, some of the older folks don't know about it or don't care about it either, because, you know, you just don't hear about it. I, based on what you said, with the trends with the young people, I think if they're presented with it, they'd be open to it. But some of the older people, I think, may be the ones that's kind of holding it back because, you know, they weren't taught that, and they don't see, you know, in general, you don't see the people you work for, they don't do it. Some of their friends, we would call them maybe some of their friends, white folks do it, you know. But,
right.
And so I'm thinking some of our older brothers and sisters, you know, that's not something that we're looking to change. So it's going to be a radical movement, you know, a radical endeavor to get people to see that, hey, this works. And then, you know, I think the co-op model has an active enemy, the corporations and the privately owned stores, they stand to lose if co-ops start to become commonplace.
Right. Well, you know, they have to get ready. They have to downsize. You know, they're getting to the point that one company or one firm wants to own everything. You know, it's time for people to step back. And you mentioned a lot of the older people who could afford to be a part of a co-op, you know, would, you know, not want to do that. Well, we have to kind of move around them.
Mm.
And go yes. after the ones that we know are willing. You know, I said move around them, you know, don't let them keep us from doing what we know we need to do.
Mm, yes, ma'am. Absolutely. Yeah, so it's you also mentioned, you know, there's companies that do, you know, large companies that have monopolies or control over certain industries, you know, and so it's like I've actually heard people, young people talk and say they like it. Like, you know, young people really love Amazon. I mean, they really like the fact that you can just pick up your phone and get whatever you want sent to your house within a few days. You know, they really enjoy that. And when I, you know, the few that I've talked to about, like, hey, wait a minute, do you know that by supporting Amazon and they get bigger and bigger, it's really, you know, it's convenient for you, but it's bad for the economy because it's a monopoly. And, you know, you're not really making any competition for them by buying everything from them. And that gives them more power to do whatever they want to do. They can raise prices.
Right.
They can slow down shipping. They can just decide they're going to just represent just a few products. They can say that, you know, they're going to, you know, just you know, make their own products and put people out of business, kind of like what Walmart does. And so, you know, I think it's going to take something like some shock treatment for people to see that, hey, wait a minute, this is not good.
Right, right. And I can remember the past president of what was our first, well, not our first, but the Black Bank, Capital City Bank. I remember he said something. He said that he went around trying to raise the money to get started, and he started having these gatherings at different houses, inviting all of these who's who of Atlanta. Well, he started in Atlanta, the who's who of Atlanta, and every time he'd invite them, they'd have a big crowd. They'd come and eat up the food, and but wouldn't leave any money.
Oh, man.
So he said he was finally approached by a man that told him, say, look, we, you know, I don't have $10,000 that I can give you. He said, but me and some of the people I know could maybe contribute $5,000 or less. So he said that's how he raised the money to start Capital City Bank, with the little man.
Mm.
Because the big man, or who we thought were the big people, or who he thought were the big people, would come, they'd eat, they'd have a good time, but they would leave and not leave any money.
Wow, wow.
So that has stuck with me as a model for getting started. That's why I say, you know, we have to move around the people with the money that we think has the money and go to the little person that may have, you know, $5, $10, $100 that they can invest.
Yes, ma'am. It's a lot of people that have a little bit of money, and it's so many of them, it's, you know, all the two all together can make a huge amount of money.
That's right.
Well, let me pause for a station break. Okay, so brothers and sisters, we're halfway through the show. And if you would like to contribute to the conversation, we're talking about co-ops, farming co-ops. Reviewing our last show last week with Brother Eric Simpson. And if you have any questions or comments, just push the 1 on your dial and you will be brought in. So, yes, ma'am. So, were you able to hear Brother Eric Simpson's show, Sister Ann?
That's Brother Eric.
Last week's show, were you able to listen to it?
Oh, yes. Yes, I did.
What did you think about
it? I thought it was great. I thought it was great. He's doing a great job with the co-op. We have to, you know, get the word out to more young farmers that he's doing this. I'm seeing where a lot of young people are getting into farming. And, you know, they may not know of a co-op or, you know, may not be aware of his co-op or any other co-op. But, you know, it's, you know, the thing about co-ops, let me back up and say this. I've been in meetings where we are trying to get co-ops started. The thing about farming, when you're farming without chemicals, you cannot guarantee that you're going to have a product at the time that the person may want a product.
Mm.
That poses a problem in trying to get a co-op started. Whereas, you know, you have to have lots of people who are willing to farm and get these products out.
Wow.
Otherwise, you may have problems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I thought his show was excellent. I think he's doing a great job. And I wish him well. I wish him well.
Yes, ma'am. I'm looking forward to going to one of his presentations at the end of this month to learn more about a little more details about his farming co-op, and he's going to give some more details on co-ops in general. So that's I'm looking forward to that being a pretty exciting presentation. It's going to be in one of the Kwanzaa days, so that should be nice.
Right. Well, I was in the grocery store today looking for some frozen vegetables. And I was having to look through, you know, they're getting to the point now where it's hard to find just plain frozen vegetables. You've got the steam fresh. You've got all of this other stuff surrounding, you know, the plain frozen vegetables are in a little bitty space in between the steam fresh and the other stuff. And on the other side, you've got steamed vegetables and entrees. I'm saying, wow, this is getting bad. So I went to the fresh section. And it's even worse in the fresh section. They don't have a lot of fresh vegetables that are not packaged. You know, they have the string beans and the other things, the spinach and all the greens are packaged up now, and you just have to buy that.
Wow. Do you see it getting any better, or you think it's going to get worse?
I think it's going to get worse until the people themselves start, well, until the farmers get to the point where they can start having more farm stands, people get familiar with buying from the farmer, directly from the farmer, because they save. They save. But I don't see the grocery store as getting better with what they're doing.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, it's actually working its way to be a crisis, you know, with the farms being struck by the weather and pests. I heard in the news just a couple of days ago, actually, that in Florida, they're selling orange groves like never before because they have a pest there, a worm, I believe, that's affecting the citrus trees. And I think this one guy they had on 60 Minutes, he inherited the orange grove from his grandfather. It's been in the family for at least three generations. And he was lamenting because he had to sell it because he's just the losses he took was so bad. And not only that, the remediation of the trees and the land, he has no way to get the money to do it, and no guarantee because the pest is still there. So they're saying,
wow,
you know, Florida orange juice is, you know, one of the most popular orange juices. It's been around for years. They say that's not the case anymore, and they're selling the land. You can go there and buy some orange groves in Florida, but you know, but you can't grow oranges.
Mm. Yeah, well, you know, we're seeing now where the use of pesticides have caused a lot of damage. Who knows where this worm originated? It could be from the pesticide. It could be from them bringing in imports from other countries. You just never know.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, so that's the, you know, we're going to inherit, we're inheriting a world, the youth
can you
in
hear
particular.
Me?
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam.
You made
yeah,
it home?
Well, yes. You know, the Staple Goods Project is a cooperative. Okay? And we set it
yes, sir.
Up to provide a service. There was a demand, but we couldn't satisfy the demand because we didn't have enough demand right here close to us. But we had demand, but it was all spread out, so we had to figure out how we can get the products and distribute it at a cost that people can afford. So we decided to work together in a cooperative. Now, the farmers, they have a different problem. Like Sister Ann was saying, let's say if I produced, right now, I got turnip greens out there, I got cabbage, and I got broccoli. Well, the weather is going to determine when that stuff is going to come off. And when that broccoli and cabbage, when they decide to come off, it's like it's going to be 2 weeks. It's going to be I got to get rid of all of it if I had 1 acre or if I had 100 acres of broccoli.
Man, that's
I would have to get rid of all of it in 2 weeks. Okay? Now, and when that's over, then that's over. So that means that people are not used to eating like that. People are not used to shopping like that. People are used to shopping for a pound of broccoli at a time, whenever they want, summer, winter, midnight. I mean, anytime they want. They can go to Walmart and they can buy them some broccoli.
Mm-hmm.
However, the farmer cannot produce it like that. That's why the farmers get in the co-op so that, let's say we're producing broccoli. If we got 10 farmers producing broccoli. So, I would plant my 10 acres of broccoli at one time, and then 2 weeks later, somebody else in the co-op will produce their broccoli, plant it, hoping that we would have a staggered harvest so that we can have a continuous supply to our customers. However, no matter how much we stagger it, it's only going to be within a 2 month period, or even a month period, that for this area of the country, you're going to have that broccoli. So you have it from, you can plant twice a year, and you have one in the late fall, so maybe from December to January, you have broccoli. Then it's out. Then you plant in the spring to have broccoli to come out in April, May. So in the 15th of April to the 15th of May, you'd have broccoli. That's only 1 month, though. And that's it. So even if you had a co-op that had a staggered start, you only got a month anyhow. Now, so who's going to supply that broccoli for that market? Well, somebody else is going to supply that broccoli for that market. Now, if we get big enough then we can have farmers in our co-op who produce in different parts of the world and have a different time for the stuff to come out.
Right.
But
yes,
to do that, I would already have to have enough control of the market, meaning what? I'd have to have somebody who's going to buy that stuff year-round in the quantities so efficient enough for us to develop an efficient shipping system. One thing about co-ops, producing co-ops, you have to be close to one another somewhat because you can't be shipping products just to be shipped for long distance. In other words, let's say if I had 10 farmers in Terrell County, then we can come to what's called a buying station. One of the farmers could have the refrigeration, and we all bring it there when our product in, and then from there we schedule the shipments. And with our boxes that have the co-op's name on it, our brand. However, if instead of that, if it's 10 farmers, but we in 10 different counties, okay, then how is the farmer going to have the time to drive across a whole county or two to get to the distributions, to the storage center? The weather could be prohibitive, and that person can't do it that day. And next thing you know, we don't have a product for the shipping. So to try to coordinate all of that, that's why co-ops usually start close to one another. Now, when black farmers were close to one another, and a lot of them were close to one another, a lot of them, we developed co-ops. We bought 16 million acres of land by 1910, and we developed co-ops. One of the co-ops had a 500,000 farmers.
Man.
And then they came and they killed and they lynched a bunch of people to bust the co-op that was in three states. But they came in, the Knight Riders, and they killed people for doing that. So this is why the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that our unity is more powerful than an atomic weapon. And the enemy knows that. So anytime we try to come together, then they bust us apart. So then people are afraid to develop a co-op because they claim that that's communism or socialism. And, you know, but we live in a free country. Yeah, if you got some damn money, you it's free. But if you don't have no money, it ain't free. So you should be able to pull your money together. But then when it's illegal, because they say you're a communist or you're a socialist or, you know, doing some suspicious stuff. Just right now, I just delivered some staple goods to a terminal. And when I first started doing that, the terminal did not want to accept the product because they didn't know who I was.
What do you mean?
Well, I'm coming here. I got to bill a lady. I've already paid your company for you to put this on your damn truck and take it here and there. Here's the paperwork. You don't even know who the hell I am. But for white folks, if you ain't supposed to be in business for yourself down here. You supposed to be working for somebody. So what are y'all doing? You mean what I'm doing? I'm being a goddamn American. But you can't do that if you're black. Okay? You can't do that. You can only work for somebody else on the plantation. So that's why co-ops have a hard time getting established. And then it's not taught. Like Brother Eric said, you know, it's not taught in school. You know about sole proprietorship. You know about partnership. You know about corporation. You know about LLC now, limited liability corporations. But co-op is not taught. I haven't. It was
right.
I was working with the black landlords, and we had a conference, and they had black lawyers there trying to help farmers not lose their land. So I asked the question to the black lawyers: how many of y'all know about a cooperative corporation? None of them ever heard of a cooperative corporation.
Man.
Okay? And they're lawyers. So it's a matter of control of information and controlling the people. Now, about what's going on with the food in the grocery stores.
Now, before you go on, Doc, we got a caller.
Okay, good. Put them on.
Okay, caller with the last four digits, 4644. What's your name and where are you calling from? Caller with the last four digits, 4644.
Yeah, this is I'm calling from the Midwest. My name is Pianchi. How are you doing tonight?
Fine, sir. Thank you for your call.
Yeah, what state is this gentleman in?
Well, which
he's in Georgia. Eric is in West Georgia.
You know, there are black cooperatives, and I don't have my notebook with me. It's one in Mississippi, and I think it's one, and it may be one in Georgia. And there are some food co-ops in Georgia that does organic. You got another black Medina Farms. I think they in Georgia. And I tell you, if you want to find out who they are, you would have to contact the Agriculture Department with Alcorn State. You familiar with that university?
Yes, the brother mentioned it last week.
Might have been me. But no, if you contact Alcorn State, they will, connect you, get you in contact with those co-ops. It's a cooperative is what it is. Mississippi, I think it's called Mississippi Valley. Then there's another one. I can't think of the name. Tupelo or something like
one
that.
One of them is called Mount Bayou.
Well, that may be a third one because that name is not familiar. And the guy that was leading it, then he retired, and a younger black man took it over. But what they do, if you got a large grocery store that needs produce, the people, the produce seeker goes to them, and they make the connection with the farms in order to put whatever quantity that outlet is looking for. So there's black truckers, too.
So, how do you know about these co-ops, brother? Share with us how you know about these co-ops.
Well, I draw up, I was working with some people over in another country helping them design a poultry farm. And it's a giant poultry farm where they'll be able to harvest around 360,000 birds every 52 days. And there's another black grocer up in St. Louis, Sterling Moody. And I just happen to run into these people. And there's black truckers, too, that would make that run, but they would have to have something to come back down if they start down. Well, if they start up here, if they make a run down there to bring stuff up to wherever you are, but they don't want to be going back empty. That's the thing with those truck drivers. But you know what? You asked me that question. Everything we need is out there. It's out there.
The one thing is not out there.
What's that?
A organized set of buyers, an organized community ready to receive the products from the black farmers, an organized community who are also cooking and not going to McDonald's.
Well, I can't tell you about the cooking now. You got to have the women before you can get that going on.
Well, that's real. That's what's going on.
Yeah.
So that's what's got to change.
These women nowadays don't know how to cook. Not all, but a whole bunch of them don't.
Well, if we don't get somebody to cook it, then there's no place we can sell our product.
Well, you know where your products could go? In these inner city school lunch programs. That there's another issue. Now, I know for sure that Whole Foods up here, and I think Trader Joe's too in the Missouri area, was looking for organic food. And there's a black woman in Georgia, and I don't have my notebook here with me. And she say they buy her stuff as fast as she can grow it. So the opportunity is out there, and the people that are doing these things are there. Now, there are, for instance, you got rice farmers black rice for them, but they don't have no mills that they own. So they have to take their rice to a mill, and that mill will store it and pay them whatever the price is at the time. They hang on to it until the price is ideal, then they ship it. But I just wanted to share that information with you.
Now, Brother Eric, I would hope that people would get in contact with Brother Eric, because if they're wanting to get into farming, since they have a co-op already in West Georgia, and there's land for sale to the older people who are going out of farming.
Mm-hmm.
So people who are living in different areas, if you want to get into farming, need to contact him, because it would be good to start a farm in an area where there's already a co-op that is going, ongoing, so that you would have a place to market your product, and you can market, you can produce the products that they are presently selling, instead of you going to try to start something all over and you got no market for your product. This just happened in Mississippi recently, where some black folks got together, bought some land, produced a lot of crop, and then it all got wasted in the field because they didn't have
wow.
the market set up.
Yeah,
so
you gotta get everything
again,
right.
It's a process. When we have not studied, they don't teach economic history. Meaning what? The history of economic development. This is why the Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, Volume 2, was so important, because in there you can study the way that the Jews took over the cotton market all over the world. And they used our labor to produce it, but they came here to find cheap land. And then brought us slaves, but they already had a market for their product when they did that. They didn't come and grow and not have a market for their product. This is why I say, in the end, the consumer controls the market, and the big corporations controls the minds of the consumers. So the consumers only do what they want them to do, which is buy processed food and to buy from the fast food restaurants. That's why they're doing it, because they're being programmed to do it. And the only way we're going to be able to change things is to change the program in the consumer's head.
Well, you know, another thing, if you look at the Black Enterprise Top 100 businesses, and I think there's a company called Act One. It's owned by a black woman. And I think she does like 2.2 billion a year. And I think she's in food services. But that there is the infrastructure that a person would need, and just be able to supply her outlets, her venture, for what it needs to have.
Well, we got to track her down.
All right.
But
I'm trying to find her. Just leave me on. I'll just be on mute when I find her. I'll pop back in. You got about six
Thank
minutes.
Thank you.
Well, it's good to have knowledgeable callers that can appreciate the conversation and contribute to it in filling the void. So we appreciate Brother calling in and doing the research as well.
Well, you know, back to, we established the Staple Goods Project because we were producing, we had a flour mill, we got a flour mill, and we produced flour. But we couldn't sell enough of it here locally because there weren't enough people who wanted it. They weren't cooking.
Mm-hmm.
We had people who wanted it all over the country, but they didn't want enough for us to be able to ship it. Now, people now are used to buying a book or buying a TV or other stuff over to Amazon and it getting shipped to them 2-3 days later. But the cost of the shipping for a book or for even a computer is a small percent of the total cost of that computer. So if you got a computer that's $500, let's say $500,
mm-hmm.
and it costs you $20 to ship it, so then the total is $520. That don't
mm-hmm.
you know, that don't hurt. But suppose you got a case of flour that's 40 pounds, and the wholesale price on it is $30 for 40 pounds. but to ship it, it costs $40.
Yes, sir.
Because it's 40 pounds. Now, whereas the computer only going to weigh about maybe 10 pounds. Now, the laptops weigh, you know, less than that. So let's say 10 pounds, and they ship according to weight. So therefore, the shipping cost is going to be less for that $500 computer than for a 40 pound, $30 case of flour. So, but people are not going to pay $70 for 40 pounds of flour. So, we had to figure out another way to get the product moved, and that's why we had developed the Staple Goods Project Cooperative so that we could combine our flour with navy beans, with brown rice, with raw sugar, with honey, all these products together. So now we're able to produce a pallet of 500 pounds or more of different items, so then we can ship it LTL. Now, we tried to ship it with black farmers. I mean, not black farmers, black truckers. But we were putting them out of business because you can't take a tractor trailer and load 20 pallets on that tractor trailer, and they have to deliver it to 20 different cities. And the cities they got to deliver to, they don't have a forklift to get it off, and they don't have a dock to roll up to.
Right.
So we tried it with some black truckers. But each time we tried it, they complained because they were losing money. And I don't want them to lose money.
Right.
So that's why we're doing it the way we are, because we have experimented. And in the future, when we get enough volume going to enough cities, and we also have stores that can receive it that have forklifts and have a dock, then we can use the black truckers to ship our products, because we'd be shipping a lot of it, and there would be a dock and a forklift to get it off their truck. They ain't going to sit there and unload the thing one by one by hand.
Right, right.
Where they make money is that they drop off a lot of stuff at one location, pick up something else, and move someplace else. They don't be sitting there unloading stuff all day long. Time is money. So, again, this is one thing I like about the Ministry of Agriculture. It has forced us to understand the reality of the reality and not just theory of what we want to do, what can be done, but we actually are in the process of doing it and learning as we do how the system works and then organize ourselves to fit into a niche in the system by which we can get started and operate and grow one day into an Amazon.
Yes, sir.
That company is Act One, and her name is Janice Bryant. And if she's not the one that's dealing in the type of way that you want it to happen, then you can find the one which is. But, you know, you made a great point there. People have to put this stuff together. The Koreans control the produce market in the tri-state area, which is New York, New Jersey, and I don't know what the other state is. And they start growing it, and they control the markets. Actually, put the Jews out of business. So it can be done, but you got to have dedicated people to know what the heck they're doing. Heck, Brother Wrigley say you can grow all the organic food you want on his farm, but you got to come pick the weed. But anyway, you're doing a good job. Keep it up.
Thank you very much, brother, and thank you for coming back and bringing that information in. And, Doc, we're down to the last minute. Any closing statements?
Well, I think Brother Eric is going to be down here also. He's going to let us know when that is to talk to the farmers down here about their co-op and getting involved with their co-op. And I'm looking forward to that because I really want to work with the brother and see if we can produce some things for their co-op.
Yes, sir. Well, praise be to Allah. Well, we look forward to having brother here. And inshallah, next week we'll have a guest that we can have another lively show. So thank you, Dr. Ridgely, and brothers and sisters, thank you for tuning in. And we look forward to having you all next week. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Tennessee. Lord, I've really been real stressed. Down and out, losing ground.
Yeah.
Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters be messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go. To let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone.
Alone.
I never at once felt so alone.
Alone.
I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel. Not just my fifth tire.
Rosadon and Baba.